So for this evening's talk, I wanted to explain more about mindfulness and its different strengths, because this has been something which has been a problem described by people in the interviews, and it's good to understand a deeper meaning of mindfulness. I must admit that this explanation is not found in the suttas, nor is it contradicted by the suttas, and this comes from my own personal experience of what happens with mindfulness as you develop stronger and stronger meditations. It is what I call the different levels of mindfulness, their different powers and intensities. But it also brings to very into clarity the importance of happiness, of piti sukha, and where that piti sukha actually comes from in one's meditation. I will point out that it's a sign that your mindfulness is getting strong when you start to experience happiness. And a story which illustrates this, and please, I apologize if these stories and similes which I give, if you've heard them before, but I'm in the unfortunate situation that almost every time I open my mouth there is a recorder in front of it, which means that every simile, every story, every anecdote from my personal life has been recorded. And it's impossible not to repeat yourself, because my life is only 59 years and a bit old. My monastic life only 36 and a bit years. So that the stories which I have are limited. But I always remember that even in the Sutta Pitaka, you see the same story repeated by the Buddha several times. So this is just how it happens to be. But even though you do repeat the same stories that people have said, the people who pay attention have said, they can see a deeper meaning every time it's repeated, which is why I don't mind repeating those stories. But this is the story of the monastery in which I live in Australia. 27 years ago and a bit, I was sent to Western Australia by Ajahn Chah to help set up a monastery in Australia. And so we had very little funds, but we were looking for a block of land in which we can build a forest monastery. So we wanted it not too far away, not too close. About an hour from the centre of the city was our maximum distance. We eventually got a nice piece of land about 55 minutes from the centre of Perth, and that's our Bodhinyana Monastery now. It's been very successful. But it's on top of a hill. It's not a big mountain like here in Bandrawala. It's only a small little hill. But nevertheless, I had been living in that monastery for 7 to 9 years. And I'd always go up and down that hill in a vehicle. We couldn't do any Bindabhata in the local area because there were no Buddhists, and the nearest village was about 8 kilometres away anyway. So we would stay in our monastery. If we went for walks, we went for walks in the forest to the east of our monastery. But the main road was to the west. So for about 7 to 9 years, I cannot remember exactly, every time I'd gone up and down that road was in a vehicle. But it happened one morning, I was returning from some appointment, and there was plenty of time to get to the monastery before Dana, which was about 10:30. So I asked the driver to let me out on the bottom of the hill. I wanted to walk up for the first time. It was a beautiful spring day and a good occasion for a pleasant walk, only about 2 and a bit kilometres up the hill. And as I started walking up the hill, a strange experience happened. It was that I could not recognise my surroundings. Even though I'd been up and down that hill maybe 3 or 4 times a week for about 7-8 years, it was as if I was looking at that hillside for the first time. I could see things I hadn't noticed before, so much so that the hillside was unrecognizable. And it was such a strange experience that I stood still. And when I stopped moving, the hillside changed again. When I stood perfectly still and gazed at that hillside, I started to see rocks, little flowers, the shape of the tree bark. I saw so many things I never noticed before. It was just so beautiful. And in that spring sunshine, the grass was just so green. And you could see the different colours of the lichen on the rocks. Everything was like dazzling in its beauty. And it was one of those experiences which was strange. As I continued my walk up the hillside, I started thinking, what was going on? Am I going crazy? Is this some meditation experience? Or what is it? And you know that I was trained in science, so I analysed it from a science perspective, and it became very clear to me what had happened. And it gave rise to a simile for meditation and mindfulness. But first, going back to the science of what had happened. When you're looking through the window of a speeding car, your eyes don't have time to record all the images presented to it. For those of you who studied science at school, an image forms at the back of your eye on the retina. When you're looking through the window of a speeding car, before that image fully forms, another image comes up to dislodge it, and then another image, and another image. The image does not fully form, and your mind does not have time to explore it before a new image comes. That was what was like looking at that hillside through the window of a speeding car. Just the nature of the body meant I could not take it all in. It was too much, too fast. But when I got out of the car and started walking, the image on the back of my eye had more time to form. Literally, I could see more detail, and the colours were richer. That was why I could not recognise the hillside. Even the colours were different to what you see through the window of a speeding car. But when I stood perfectly still, only then did the image in the back of my eye fully form. Only then could all of the details appear. Only then were all the colours fully, completely rich. Which is why that when I stopped and stood still, the whole hillside looked incredibly beautiful. Greens were much deeper than I'd ever seen before. Detail which I'd missed. In fact, I'd missed so much detail that I couldn't recognize the hillside. Now, this is a great simile for mindfulness. Because we move so fast through our life, even as monks, always doing so much, even thinking too much, because of that, even what we see an image, and before it's fully formed, we move on to something else. We hear a sound, and then something else happens. We feel a sensation in the body, and then something else happens. One thing follows after the other so fast, we don't know anything. And when we slow down, our senses have more time to fully form the image, and our mind has more time to explore it. But when we are fully still, only then do we see what's out there. And what we see becomes very, very beautiful. This was experiences which resonated or made me recall the time when I first went on my meditation retreat at Cambridge as a student in 1970. How many years ago is that now? 41 years ago now. On that first meditation retreat, still a student, still a novice meditator, we were allowed to go on a walk every morning for 1 hour. And because the retreat was held in the town I was studying in Cambridge, I knew the area so well that I realized that the place we had booked for meditation was only maybe 5 minutes from the Cambridge Botanical Gardens. So I went to those botanical gardens thinking that I could go into the gardens and have a nice walk for exercise before breakfast. But I got to the gate of those botanical gardens. And at the gate was a clump of bamboo, and I was stunned by the beauty of that bamboo. It was deliciously beautiful. If you ever notice the way that bamboo is so slender, and the way that by nature it bends almost sensually to a taper, and even the leaves of the bamboo, incredibly beautiful. It's one of the reasons why in Chinese watercolours you always see many bamboo, because it's one of the most beautiful trees that artists love to paint it. And there, in the entrance to the Cambridge Botanical Gardens, was a wonderful example of a beautiful clump of bamboo. And it drew my attention so much that I stood and gazed at it. I was standing still there, gazing at a clump of bamboo, and I thought if somebody saw me, they'd think I was crazy or on drugs. Because normally, Western people, especially English, don't stand still watching a plant. Fortunately, there was a bench close by. So I sat down on that bench and I spent my whole hour, which was supposed to be for walking, staring at this very incredibly beautiful clump of bamboo. And of course, the desire for breakfast took me away. But when the next morning, 8 mornings of the 9 mornings I was on that retreat, I went back to that clump of bamboo and I just gazed at it in awe, in delight, every morning. When the retreat was over, I went back to studies and socializing with your friends and girlfriends took up my time. But I had one free afternoon and I thought I'm going to go and visit this beautiful clump of bamboo. So I got on my bicycle and I bicycled to the botanical gardens, which was maybe 10 or 15 minutes bicycle ride away. And I went into the entrance and there at the entrance I found the most disappointing, dry, desiccated, dirty, unwatered clump of bamboo I'd ever seen. Was that my beautiful piece of bamboo? I could not recognize it. Now it had no beauty at all. It was a plant who was growing in the wrong place. Bamboo does not do well in the English climate. It needs richer soil, more wet, more sort of warmth. And I was stunned. Was that the same clump of bamboo which gave me delight for 8 days? And of course, I remember the reason why it was delightful. When I was meditating, my mindfulness was so strong, but I could see such beauty in a clump of bamboo. When I was back to studying, running around, doing things, I'd lost that strength of mindfulness, and I could not see the beauty anymore. I tell all the laymen on this retreat, if you have some good meditation on this retreat, if your mindfulness gets very strong, when you go home, your wife will look very beautiful. You think, my goodness, wife, have you spent all my money going to beauty salon? She is exactly the same, only your mindfulness has increased. You will even notice on retreats, and lay people notice this, the food on the retreats is more delicious than ever before. And the reason is, it's the same food, but your mindfulness is stronger, that you can pick up the flavour. Because what happens when mindfulness gets strong? It gets so sensitive, so energised, almost whatever it sees is delightful and beautiful. Now I don't mind telling this story because it's good fun, especially for the Western monks here. This is a true experience of my own. My meditation was going very, very well. So because of strong mindfulness, I had lots and lots of piti sukha. And I had to go to the toilet. And before flushing the toilet, I looked in the bowl. And there in the bowl, I saw the most beautiful piece of feces I've ever seen in my life. The different shades of brown and the way it was sculpted, beautifully round, as if it was done by a professional artist. And even the smell was actually fragrant. And I looked at it for about 5 minutes, and it took a lot of renunciation to flush it down the toilet. I thought of taking it out and keeping it was so beautiful. Now that's what happens when you get so vibrant. Even a piece of feces looks beautiful. So, how easy it is to watch the breathing when you have such strong mindfulness. This ordinary breath looks so, so beautiful. the Piti Sutra, which comes up at this stage of meditation, is a sign of the strength of your mindfulness. The strong mindfulness is always accompanied by Piti Sutra. Whether you watch the breath, whether you taste your food, whether you watch a hillside, or even look in the toilet bowl, everything is delightful. Now this is an experience which I hope every one of you gain, because it makes meditation so easy and so much fun. So where does that strength of mindfulness come from? I have already given you the clue when I've made a distinction between the two halves of the mind. The passive mind, which is mindfulness, and the active mind, what I've called in my books the doer, the controller, the thinker, the planner, the one which is always doing something. And the energy of your mind, mostly 90% minimum, goes into doing things, into thinking, into planning, into reacting. So much so that hardly anything is left for knowing, which is one of the reasons for dullness. So once you overcome that dullness, once the energy starts to go into knowing, and you take it totally away from doing, so you're not reactive. Whatever happens in the mind, you just let it be. You don't react. You're not a great thinker. You have a still mind, a quiet mind, a Santamuni mind, the quiet sage. When you have that Santa, the quietness in the mind, that's the Pali. Once you have that quietness in the mind, that stillness in the mind, because you're not doing, you're not making things happen, you're not controlling, you're not doing things, then the energy starts to flow into knowing. Your mindfulness increases in strength. It's because in my experience as a meditator, I've seen the doer is my enemy. It is the thing which I really, this is the cause of the hindrances. Is it that controller? It is the sankharas. It is the house builder in the Buddha simile. The doer, the maker, the creator inside of you. And I see that just sucks energy from my mindfulness. Every time I fight, I control, I try to do something with my meditation, I'm taking energy away from this precious thing called mindfulness. So once I let things be, I let go, I stop fighting, I stop controlling, I stop craving, I stop wanting, I just leave things alone, then the energy can go to only one place, into mindfulness. Basically, I wake up. You wake up so much that the mindfulness becomes strong enough to watch the breath. Very often lay people say, I just can't watch the breath. It's what's happening there is your mindfulness isn't strong enough to watch the breath. And already I said the first thing in Anapanasati is to create enough mindfulness, enough strength of mindfulness, so you can actually see the breath. In the same way, when you go out of this room tonight, or maybe there's too many lights here, but if there wasn't any lights outside, when you go out from a lit room into the darkness, first of all, you can't see anything. You have to wait until the pupils in your eye expand, so you can start to see forms. At first, you can't see. You wait and be patient, and then you can see. And if you wait long enough, even by the starlight, you can find your way through the forest and the jungle, which I had to do many times. The same way with mindfulness, you have to wait for it to become strong enough to be able to see things like the breathing. But remember that for many people, you have to be so busy, the sorts of things which your brain has to deal with are so coarse, that when you quickly turn from, say, going into the shops or going into the busy streets in every town and city of Sri Lanka, there's so many people around. It's chaos out there. And your brain has to deal with such coarse things. And then you come and sit down, close your eyes and meditate. Your brain is not used to such subtle images. The mindfulness is weak. So that's why many people go to sleep. The mindfulness isn't strong enough yet to meditate. So when your mindfulness is increased by present moment awareness and silence, or even doing things like walking meditation, doing simple things which don't excite the brain, but give the brain a chance to get its energies back to be able to perceive subtle objects, then you find the mindfulness increases in its strength. So it can actually watch the breath. Now one of the great advantages of the breath is that as you start to watch the breath, it calms down. And as it calms down, it needs greater degrees of mindfulness to be able to keep up with the breath as it settles. Which is also why that for some of you the breath gets very peaceful and very subtle, but you can't watch it anymore. It disappears. And then you get lost in thinking or go to sleep. Your mind, the strength of mindfulness doesn't keep up. And of course, you should understand why. Somehow, somewhere, you're still doing things. You're not still enough. Stillness is the key, and also the goal. Stillness is the meaning of samadhi. And once you understand that samadhi is perfect, deep stillness, you understand that every time, every moment, you can be still, stop doing things, is a step closer to the jhanas. So when you keep still, and you stop doing things, you'll experience your mindfulness get stronger and stronger and stronger. And during this retreat, hopefully you'll experience the change in the intensity and power of your mindfulness. You'll find you can perceive more things, more blades of grass on the lawn, more leaves on the trees. You'll be able to feel much more of the wind and the cold. You'll become, instead of a dull mindfulness, a very sharp mindfulness. And even what you eat has far more taste to it. You are waking up. And when you get to a certain stage, you'll find it's easy to watch the breath, because your mindfulness is strong enough and powerful enough to watch subtle objects. And as the mindfulness increases, in the same way when I stopped I could see more detail on the hillside, on the road up to my monastery, I could see more blades of grass, more shapes on the bark, more rocks between the grass, more flowers hidden in that hillside. I could see so much more as my mindfulness increased. So as your mindfulness increases, you can see far more of the breath. And I said this morning, there are 1,000 different feelings in just one in-breath. Some people think that's crazy. How can there be? But when your mindfulness increases, it gets so strong, you can see so much more. Which is why that's an important stage. Because see the full breath from the very beginning to the end. That shows you your mindfulness is getting strong. And it should be strong enough by the end of many, many minutes of watching the full in-breath and the full out-breath, so strong that the delight should be coming up. The mindfulness gets strong enough to be happy. Whatever you watch becomes delightful. And that delight, that pitisukha which comes up, is a sign your mindfulness, your sati, has got energy behind it. It's strong and powerful. And whatever you see then is delightful. You come out of the meditation, you've got a smile on your face. You just start walking to the doorway and you look at the floor. You've seen how beautiful these tiles are? How many different shades and colours there are and how those little dots are arranged? It's amazing just what grabs your attention. When that starts to happen, you are not going crazy. This is meant to happen. Your mindfulness is getting strong and you're seeing beauty almost anywhere. When this starts to happen, you find sometimes meditators just standing in awe, just at a leaf which has fallen on the ground. They can see so much in it.
your mindfulness going strong. That's a great sign. And when your mindfulness goes onto something like the meditation, so much in, just one in-breath, it's so fascinating. No way are you going to have a wandering mind. No way are you going to fall asleep. It's just too much to interest you. It's like seeing the most beautiful piece of art. I spent many years in that Thai forest monastery, Wat Nanachat. I was one of the founding monks, six monks who went up there to start that monastery. I was one of those six. And I remember during one Was season, the only place we could do walking meditation, because the monastery was flooded, was actually in the sala, in the hall. Now, it was only a concrete hall, no carpet, no mats, no tiles, just concrete which was laid by the villagers. And as I was walking backwards and forwards, you know, putting my attention 2 meters in front, when you do walking meditation, I hope to give a talk on walking meditation later on, I put my eyes 2 meters in front, just feeling the sensations in my feet. Then I noticed the piece of concrete in front of me was incredibly beautiful. I had to stop. It was a work of art. The different colours of grey and the textures of the concrete, as if everything became so incredibly clear and beautiful. And I looked at that for, I don't know, about 15 or 20 minutes, just thinking I should cut that out and send it to some art gallery somewhere. I never seen such a beautiful piece of concrete. This is what happens when mindfulness starts to get strong. Everything becomes joyful and beautiful. You become happy. And I mentioned in Narada Center a quote from the Dhammadhyaya Sutta, where King Prasenadi went to see the Buddha. Actually, for the last time, he would die soon. And he went to pay gratitude to the Buddha by bowing at his feet and kissing his feet. And during the conversation which occurred afterwards, the Buddha asked King Prasenadi, or King Prasenadi said, I enjoyed so much coming to this Jetavana monastery. I loved coming to this monastery throughout my life. And the Buddha said, why? Why do you like coming to the monastery? And the king said, because when I come to this monastery, all the monks are smiling and happy. And that was one of the few times where in the suttas, in the word of the Buddha, you have a description of what it was like to visit a monastery. All the monks were happy and smiling. And the Buddha replied, yes, great king, that's what you can expect when the monks are practicing meditation and getting results in their meditation. Happiness is a sign your mindfulness is getting strong and your meditation is progressing. So, I'll give you some advice. Never follow after a miserable teacher. If you have an acharya who's miserable, then they haven't learned meditation yet. Be with a happy teacher. That's a sign that their mindfulness and strength of meditation is good enough to teach you. So, when that mindfulness gets strong enough, this is what happens. You see the breath so easily and you get joy with the breath. It gets so powerful. So powerful that when you can see every part of the breath, every part of the delightful breath. And that is why the breath can disappear. It's delightful. The delight increases and it takes over from the breath. The delight becomes the object of your meditation. Breathing in and breathing out, you experience piti. Breathing in and breathing out, you experience sukha. Your mindfulness is increasing. And it's increasing so much, it's just with the breath, the beautiful, delightful breath, the rest of the body vanishing. I've told to many people that if you have distractions, the sound of somebody outside, or an ache in the body, or anything else which is distracting you, when you get to that delightful mind, there's no distractions anymore. You just can't hear people. Why? Because you're having such a beautiful experience. Many people have told me in Perth, there are many Sri Lankan Buddhists in Perth, and they tell me that sometimes their husband is watching the cricket, you know, the broadcast of, you know, Sri Lanka playing India. They're watching the cricket, and their wife says, darling, the dinner's ready. and the husband pays them no attention. And I tell them, look, this is natural. They're just not hearing you. They're so absorbed in the cricket that actually they just can't hear you. They're not ignoring you on purpose. They just can't hear you. Even if you shouted in their ear, they wouldn't hear you. Because they're so one-pointed on the cricket, they're enjoying it. Because they're enjoying it, all the other distractions, like wives, like telephone calls, like dinners, they're not there for you. Now imagine you could do that with your breath. Your breath is just so delightful. Better than a cricket match. Better than a movie. Better than music. You're so delighted in this breath. All the distractions, they vanish. This way, you maybe hear someone in the distance. Yes, my wife, but it's way in the distance somewhere. Maybe sort of, the ache in my leg, but it's way over there. I can't even sort of be bothered with it. Because you're delighting in the breath. That delight takes over. And as the breath disappears, of course, the nimitta comes up. And if you have strong enough mindfulness, the nimitta does appear beautiful and joyful, delightful. For those of you who have had light in the mind, but it hasn't had the bliss, the joy, that's a sign that your mindfulness hasn't kept up. It's not strong enough yet. You have not developed enough stillness. Or maybe outside of meditation you've been thinking too much, doing too much. So your mental energy is not sufficient. So the cure for that, outside of meditation, be more still. Don't do so much. Do the minimum required for this retreat. Especially, don't think about the past and future. Don't go thinking about other monks or other lay people. My teacher Ajahn Chah said the maximum you should think of other people 5% of the time. 95% of the time your focus should be on yourself. And that was only maximum. When I was a young monk, I was looking at other monks 95% of the time. You're sitting wrong, you're snoring, I was so critical of my fellow monks. I was looking at them instead of looking at myself. And that's why I was wasting so much energy. So forget what other people are doing. That's their karma. If they're sleeping in, if they're snoring, if they're just breaking their precepts, if they're just being stupid, that's their business. It's none of your business. You just make sure that you keep your attention on your practice, on your body and your mind, not on other people's. And when you're or your attention on your own body and your mind, keep it as still as possible. Move gently and gracefully. Think the minimum amount necessary just to survive on this retreat. Keep stillness as much as you possibly can. Enjoy staying stopped as long as possible, and only moving the minimum amount required. That way, you're developing stillness, your mindfulness increases, your energy increases, your delight increases, and when you get to something like nimittas, it's now a beautiful nimitta. Why? It is not so much because of your sila and purity, now it's because your mind has energy. Whatever you look at is beautiful. With that degree of energy, the bliss in the nimitta gets incredibly strong. Your mindfulness is getting very, very strong. The breath gets subtle. The nimitta gets brilliant. This is all testing your mindfulness to make sure it's strong enough before it can get into a jhana. That nimitta has to be brilliant. Brighter than the sun. Don't go looking at the sun, you go blind. But if you imagine what it's like to look at the sun, and the nimitta is far brighter than that, and so beautiful, so delightful, sometimes you're just full of piti sukha. That's a sign your mindfulness is strong enough for the entry into a jhana. Because a jhana takes the bliss to a much higher level. I've often wondered whether in other religions they have achieved the jhanas. And there does seem to be in the Christian religion, in the Middle Ages, there seemed to be a couple of monks and nuns in the 13th century of the Common Era who seem to have got into these jhanas. But it was interesting that their descriptions, from another angle, they say there was this union with God, this one with pure love, just so much bliss, selfless. I just wasn't there, but just merged. It was incredible bliss. Happier than I... Thank you. Happier than I've ever been before in my whole existence. And that gives you an idea of the sort of blisses. Yes. The cow agrees. Gives you an idea of the sort of happinesses which we're talking about. It's a sign your mindfulness is incredibly strong. And I'll also mention later on that that energy gets very, very strong within the jhanas. So when you come out, you're incredibly happy with enormously empowered mindfulness. And once you know the strength of mindfulness in a jhana and after a jhana, then you'll understand why. That's what needed to actually see the Dhamma. The ordinary mindfulness which you have is just nowhere near powerful enough. You think it might be okay. You think you may be able to contemplate the Dhamma now with the ordinary mindfulness you have. But once you've experienced post-jhana mindfulness, you realize you're wasting your time. Get the jhana first. Contemplate the Dhamma afterwards. Because then you have the power to actually see through the illusions of life. Mindfulness reaches its peak in fourth jhana, so the Buddha said. That is the power of the mindfulness. And when you come out afterwards, your mindfulness is so strong. Still, what the Buddha said, your mind is workable, malleable, free of movement, whatever it is, strong enough for the purpose of seeing the Dhamma. So part of this practice of jhanas is the strengthening, the perfecting of mindfulness. And so that when you come out of the jhanas, your mindfulness is ready to do all these amazing things like see past lives, understand karma, and also penetrate the Four Noble Truths, anicca, anatta, dukkha, the whole lot, not before. So when you understand what mindfulness is and how to strengthen it, and you experience that strengthening of mindfulness, you know, in your meditation during this retreat, you'll understand that the happiness is just a signpost. Your mindfulness is getting strong. The ability to see deeply into things, to see more detail, is a sign your mindfulness is strengthening. So when these things happen, well done, you're on the path. Take it further. Deeper happiness, deeper strength, more power, so you can have greater mindfulness. So that's all I'm going to talk about mindfulness today. Tomorrow I'm going to start expanding on mindfulness to see how we can move it along by programming mindfulness to actually avoid some of the deeper hindrances which come up later on. But I know from yesterday I gave a talk for a little bit longer and it took so long to translate. We had hardly any time for meditation and even short time for questions. That's all I'm going to talk about for this evening.